The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Derek Chauvin, guilty on all three counts in the killing of George Floyd.
Today was a good day for African Americans.
Is it going to change anything?
We're going to hold you accountable no matter who you are.
It's a great time to reflect and see how far we've come in the last year.
Gives hope and precedence for these type of verdicts to be the norm.
I would love for this to be the last time, but it ain't going to be. And so what do we do next? How do we deal with this next?
He is Jalen Rose. I'm David Jacoby. We are Jalen and Jacoby. What is it that we do?
We get justice and get the people what they want.
Later on in the show, we'll be joined by social and political commentator Angela Ride to offer her perspective on what we are going to discuss first. Yesterday, as you all know by now, Derek Chauvin, former Minneapolis police officer, was convicted on three counts involving the murder of George Floyd on a 9.5 minute video that we all watched last spring and summer. Jalen, it was a very tense time as this verdict was about to come in. How did you feel in that moment? What was your reaction after the verdict came back guilty on three counts?
Sadly, my stomach was in knots. Even though with my own two eyes, I saw a police officer murder another man while he was handcuffed by placing a knee on his neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. And as a black man in the United States of America, understanding that usually those police officers do not get convicted. It was extremely rare to see that take place. So for anyone wondering why is everybody celebrating, that's why. And the next point I want to make, Jacoby, how did we get here? You know, in football, there's a lot of talk about field position. You know, I like to use that as it pertains to race relations as well. What's the difference between slavery and the KKK and Jim Crow and Emmett Till and Rodney King? The progress of the movement and also the influence of two things. Protest and smartphones. Those two things now literally hold the police accountable for their actions. And in this case, I don't believe, to be honest with you, without those two things, as well as the incident that took place on January 6th, they became the catalyst to the actual verdict. So I want to send my condolences to the family of George Floyd. Obviously, we celebrate that Derek Chauvin is going to be punished for his actions, but I want to make sure that we acknowledge the power of your voice and the power of protest. And shout to Stephen Jackson too, because all of that field position matters. And what I would like to know, Jacoby, is what happens next? Because while we celebrate, are there going to be police reform bills taking place? When this take place again, because it's going to take place again, it continues to happen. We know way too many names of it happening. What's going to be different? And so I appreciate the verdict. I'm happy justice was served. It's going to be interesting to see how much time he actually does behind bars.
We will find out in about 2 months when the sentencing happens. But you use the word celebrate a lot, and it was a conflicted sort of celebration. I mean, I felt relief and frankly surprise when the verdict came in, because the New York Times put out a study, right? Since 2005, there's only been 7 murder convictions for police officers. Think about that. And they did the math. That's about one in every 2,000. 1,000 occurrences. That's how rare that this happens. That's just how rare it happens. And as you mentioned, this does not happen unless Darnella Frazier takes out a phone and records that. And that is a very brave act, to record the police doing something that they believe is wrong. And without that recording, this doesn't happen. Without the global protest, this conviction does not happen. And while this brings justice for George Floyd, it does not for Eric Garner, Philando Castile, Freddie Gray, Breonna Taylor, and countless other names that we all know, that we've all seen. And when you say what happens next, I don't know. But hopefully this can be a pivot point, this can be a turning point to see more justice in these cases as we move forward. And as we move forward, we will have Angela Rye join us in the next block. But right now we're going to turn our attention to sports, because we have some big news in the world of sports as well. Last night, the Nets, powered by Kyrie Irving, got a win against the Pelicans. However, there is some bad news. James Harden suffered a setback in his hamstring rehab. He's now out indefinitely. Jalen, we don't know when he'll be back. Hopefully he will be back for the playoffs, but they're not trying to put a timeline on it. While they did get a win last night, what does this mean big picture for the Nets season?
Jacoby, you know I need four eyes, right? I need them. And I watch the Nets play when they're healthy, and know Kevin Durant has been Finals MVP twice. And I know he can't wait to get to the playoffs to turn it out. James Harden, I know he's one of the most terrific scorers in the game and the most unique offensive weapon that the league has seen. That's an absolute fact. Kyrie Irving dazzles with the basketball. He's among the elite in scoring, finishing, mid-range, three-point shooting, and he's also a champion. I was in the gym, right wing, Cleveland Cavaliers, made the jump shot over Steph Curry. I was there. I know what my eyes see. These are three of the top 12 players in the whole league. And if they were at the park, they should win all day. But this ain't the park. And there's 90 days approximately left in the NBA season. And I now believe, because of the multiple injury concerns that the Nets have had, the lack of chemistry that they're going to be able to garner from a coaching staff throughout their roster that has added so many new pieces, that also has to deal with dominant bigs in the East like Embiid, Giannis, and Bam. When I saw this news, you know what came to mind for me, Jacoby?
What's that?
The Nets not winning the East this year.
Ooh. See, I think you're wrong about that. Jalen Rose, you're telling me if Kyrie, KD, and James Harden are all in uniform on the floor for the playoffs, you still don't have them coming out of the East to go in the finals?
Jacoby, I know that they have three of the top players, the top 12 players in the league. I know that. But I respect chemistry. I respect the journey. And I understand when it's going to be moments in games where that level of trust is going to have to be there to get a defensive stop. And remember, they also struggled defensively overall, period. I just want to give credit to the other teams. I want to give credit to the growth of Philadelphia and what they did with their roster, and how Embiid has blossomed into an MVP candidate, into a dominant force, and how Ben Simmons is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and how Tobias Harris is now playing really good basketball and they got shooting around him, and how Milwaukee added Drew Holiday to go with Middleton. They still have Giannis. They still have Lopez. Like, I just really appreciate what those teams have been able to grow. So based on that, I want to give them credit, not necessarily deny the Nets. And based on this news, I now feel the Nets will not win the East this year.
The Eastern Conference playoffs, if these three men are healthy, will truly be a test of consistency, system, chemistry versus just straight up talent. And I think that we'll be addressing this again. And of course, right now, we will also have to address the verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial for the murder of George Floyd. And who better to do that than Angela Rye, social and political commentator, will join us on Jalen and Jacoby right after this. You do not want to miss it.
Got
Coming to you live from Pier 17 here in the South Street Seaport District of Manhattan and brought to you by Chase. Welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen, we have the honor, we have the privilege of being joined once again by social and political commentator Angela Rye. Thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you for having me.
Angela, when you heard the guilty verdict for Officer Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd, what was your initial response?
My initial response was disbelief, like so many of us. It wasn't one count of second degree manslaughter, not one count of second degree murder or one count of third degree murder. It was all three of the charges brought against him. And so there was a little bit of disbelief. Then there was some relief. Then there was some worry because I was like, oh, sentencing is in 2 months. It's actually going to be the day after Juneteenth on June 20th. When we really understand his fate. I was on Clubhouse last night on this app. I don't know if you all are familiar or have used it, but I was talking about how, you know, even with the bit of relief I feel, there's something in me that feels a little bit of guilt because I don't really like the carceral system, right? I don't think that it's really there to rehabilitate anyone. But similarly to how I think so many of us have looked at these cases in the past, I was like, the whole system is actually on his back and you all need to prove to Black people that you care about us enough to punish people when our lives are taken. So a lot of dichotomy and hypocrisy even in my feelings about yesterday.
Angela, what do you feel are the next steps in police reform? And can you educate the audience about the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act?
Yeah, Jalen, it's such a good question. I think what is so interesting is today there are articles coming out about what members of Congress, white members of Congress on both sides of the aisle are saying about police reform. They're saying that this verdict means that there's less pressure for police reform. And I'm saying, how? You know, at the end of the day, this is one verdict. And there are so many others where there have been no consequences or just barely consequences. And so what we did hear yesterday from Kamala Harris, what we did hear yesterday even from President Biden as well, was that it's time to continue the quest for police reform. Whether you believe there's an ability to reform the system or you believe that the system in and of itself, needs to significantly change to the point where it's overhauled and we create something completely new to restore justice and safety in communities. Just the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act has passed the House of Representatives. It passed last Congress, reintroduced by Congressmember Karen Bass this Congress, who was the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus last Congress and really led the way. It has passed again this past, just last month in March. And what we're waiting for is Senate action. We're waiting for senators on both sides of the aisle to say, you know what, this matters enough. Whether this is a vote that would cost me my seat, what I know needs to be the truth in 2021 is that it's okay for Black people to live and thrive in this country. Qualified immunity is on the table in that bill. Looking at varying implicit bias issues, money for training, all of those things are in this bill. There are a number of activists among us, Jalen, who say, you know what? The George Floyd Justice and Policing Act does not go far enough. And I understand that. But what I'm not willing to do anymore is say, you know what? Nothing is better than something. That's not my posture. And I think that we can't afford to toe that line. When you consider that even at the press conference that Attorney Ben Crump held yesterday right after the verdict, they were talking about justice and policing. What we know is that the system has to change. In order for the system to change, policies must shift. Are the only people responsible for changing policy at the federal level and members of Congress in the House and the Senate? Absolutely not. We need to see these same kinds of reforms, abolition, defunding, divestment at the state and local levels as well. Today, we also know that Merrick Garland, who is the attorney general, is holding a press conference to talk about an intensive and broad sweeping investigation into police practices in Minneapolis. We all know just from the sheer number of police officers, law enforcement officers who were at the Capitol on January 6th, that broad sweeping investigation doesn't just belong in Minneapolis. It belongs all over this country. Those are the only kinds of things that will happen when you have legislation on the books. They can't just roll out piecemeal investigation after investigation. I am rambling. I want to hear your questions and your thoughts, but I think it's so important to understand all of the many layers. And when you put pill one back, there's so many more to go. So that's why it's hard to completely breathe.
Well, you're not just rambling, you're making some really good points. And I think the one thing that people need to not overlook is while Derek Chauvin was found guilty of these charges, there were three other police officers there on the scene that did not take action to stop Derek Chauvin from committing this murder. Now, in the wake of this case, there was this uprising, there was this global protest, and in the wake of that, there were statements made by corporations and promises of to have more diversity at the corporate levels up and down the entire hierarchy. There are also sports leagues that donated money and made promises to include more diversity in the front offices of their teams and their structures. Now that we're sort of 8 to 9 to 10 months removed from that, how do you feel about the work that's been done since these promises were made?
Well, you know, the first thing I would say to you, Jacoby, is it's frustrating that it took us watching the death of a black man for 9 minutes and 29 seconds for corporate America to realize that black participation, involvement, engagement for other members of the BIPOC communities, right? Like that now we matter. Now our voices should be heard. Now Black Lives Matter should be in the signature of my email, right? Like it actually is frustrating. It is disrespectful to have to go that far to just get us to some point of equity. And what I will say is that I hope that it doesn't take another crisis, but I can tell you from my own experience, from conversations that I was even having this weekend, really am more attuned to reading this a really powerful book by Rezma Menakem called My Grandmother's Hands. And he, of course, talks about white fragility. Many people will know the book written by Robin DiAngelo as well. And you find yourself often in situations with people in corporate America, with some of your white friends, where you're comforting them, letting them know, like, you know, the road might be long, but it's worth it, right? Meanwhile, we're just trying to ensure that we can get on equal footing after being a part of this country, its institutions, its systems for more than 400 years, helping to build the things that oppressed us, right? And so what I'm saying is, I think that we really have to get to a point where there is meaningful systemic change, not lip service, not a promissory note on diversity, not a pledge that you take and ask all your corporate friends to sign on, like real meaningful change. And part of that begins in our bodies, which is Rezma's point. All of us are carrying around some type of trauma, walking around unnaturally and unreasonably so, fearing each other. And we're not gonna get very far like that. And so it really is time for the folks who are the instruments of the oppressive systems to engage in real radical shifts. And radical should not scare the people who are watching at home who might also watch the super conservative news station. It just means big change.
Angela, in sports, oftentimes athletes and coaches argue at the officials. And usually when people watch the game, they say, I don't know why they're arguing at the ref. They're not going to change the call. But when you play the game, you understand they're actually doing it for the next call. So can you acknowledge the power of protest and what that played along with January 6th in the actual verdict?
You know, the thing that's so fascinating to me about that is I've spent the last few days thinking about the power of protest for us historically. I think for a lot of folks, some young folks, some people who don't engage in activism or organizing work at all, they think that the George Floyd protests were new. They weren't. They are part and parcel of everything that was stood up and created around the Black Lives Matter movement, right? That was a movement that started after Trayvon Martin was killed by a vigilante, George Zimmerman, and there was no repercussion for his actions. Yet and still, we know that we've made progress. There's, you know, the truth about this country is that 100 years after the poorest white people could vote, Black people finally got the right to vote. The truth about this country is even after we finally got the right to vote, the Voting Rights Act was completely gutted. The 1965 Voting Rights Act was completely gutted in 2013 in a Supreme Court case called Shelby versus Holder. The truth about progress is that it ebbs and flows. And more so for any other group of people in this country, it is for people of color. And so right now, folks are protesting Georgia because voting rights are once again on the line. So it's not that any one particular movement, I think particularly around Black movements and Black politics, we can't afford to just take one thing and say we're just focusing on just living today. We have to focus on living and voting, because if we don't change policy, we can't live, right? We have to focus on our economic opportunity and rights and salaries and wages and being paid fairly and access to capital, because if we don't have our economic power, we can't move the needle on any of these other things. It is all part and parcel of what it means to find your real power in this country and to dwell in it.
That's really well put, Angela. Thank you so much for offering your time and your perspective here on Jalen and Jacoby. Thank you very much. We will be back with much more right after this. Thank you, guys. Look at the lineup on ESPN. Superstars everywhere. Make no plans this weekend. Watch ESPN and ESPN Plus. Welcome back to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen, I was in my feelings last night watching the Red Man Method Man versus battle. What a celebration of hip hop. Every hip hop head over 35 was so happy.
It was so legendary to see Red and Meth on the big stage, bring out everybody in the Wu. Shout out to my brother, Eric and Parrish, making dollars. As you mentioned, a celebration of hip hop.
I loved it so much. Jalen, we'll be back tomorrow on ESPN at 2 p.m. We always say we give the people what they want. Part of that is doing exclusive content for our podcast listeners. Now, Jalen Rose, today we had to spend a lot of the time because it was important to discuss the verdict of the Derek Chauvin trial, but that did push one certain topic out of the television show that we need to address in the podcast exclusive. New York Knicks got another win, 7 in a row. The Hornets come to the Garden. And they ran into the hottest team in the NBA, getting contributions from everywhere. But I want to shine a light on RJ Barrett because I was watching this game. RJ Barrett, terrible in the first half. Couldn't hit anything. He was like 1 for 8, 1 for 9 in the first half. 20-year-old rookie. The bright lights are on him. National game again. And what does he do? Comes back in the second half. Couldn't miss. Just could not miss. I don't know what happened in the locker room. I don't know who pulled him aside. But, man, it was so good to see just the mental toughness that it takes to start so poorly and end so strongly in an NBA game for a young man, 20 years old. Loved it so much. What do you think of the Knicks?
And that's when I describe his game, that's my favorite trait that I've been talking about the last couple of years, his maturity. And not hearing his name his first couple of years, even though the team was in the lottery last year and improved this year, that's an excellent thing. You know why? That means he's improving. He's keeping his nose clean. And he's learning what the league is all about. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. That struggle in the first half became the catalyst for a big-time second half. And for the Knicks, also quickly played well. Derrick Rose has been playing well throughout this win streak. Julius Randle has been outstanding this entire season. He's the most improved player in the league. I haven't really just sat down and thought about like points, rebounds, and assists and wins and impact from players from last year to this year. But as I just said in a vacuum, he's the one player that people felt like was a throw-in almost when the Knicks signed him. I remember people, I think this is Annie. They're all gonna laugh at me. I was like, he gonna be an all-star in the East. He can ball. He can flat out ball.
Jalen, no one is laughing at the Knicks right now. And every time I look at the standings, because don't forget, they had the second hardest schedule after the All-Star break. So all of that positive things that they had built, Randall being an All-Star, as you predicted when he went to the Eastern Conference, all of that positivity, there was sort of this doom and gloom looming on the horizon, this tough schedule they had after the All-Star break. But they've just done nothing but win 7 in a row during that tough schedule. Some good wins in there, too. They beat the Nuggets, beat the Blazers. And now they're sitting at the 5 spot, just a half game behind the Hawks. Like, they could end up hosting game 1 in the playoffs. And you know what? I'm not going to start saying that's going to happen, but I'm saying they're going to at least be in the play-in. There's no chance they go down to the 11th spot. So we'll get one playoff play-in game from the New York Knicks this season, which is a success, which is a huge success. I'm so happy about that.
I want to take you deeper into the box score for one other thing, though. As you mentioned the Knicks, you kind of glossed over something that I'll make sure I do because I get a chance to see my New York Knickerbocker fans happy. Don't sleep on the Atlanta Hawks.
You know my guy. Who's my guy on this, since he was on the Kings?
Bogdanovich. That's your man.
Bogdanovich. I love him so much. I loved him on the Kings when no one was talking about him. He was hurt all year with the Hawks. They fire Pierce, bring in McMillan right around the exact same time that he comes back into the lineup. And he has been fantastic in the last couple weeks. If you're not watching Hawks games, if you're not really a huge NBA fan, there's a white dude named Bogdanovich, not Huerter, on the Hawks. And he has just been absolutely phenomenal in the past couple weeks. I'm not sleeping on the Hawks.
He's been balling, but let's make sure we acknowledge Trae Young. He make it go. Points, rebounds, assists, double-digit assists. And Collins got more bounce to the ounce around the hoop. Lobs, backwards dunks. He out there freaking them. So big shout to Nate McMillan, who once he's become their head coach, has unlocked the potential of that roster.
Capella's been playing well lately. They've really starting to put it together and become the Hawks that you thought they were going to be. Because I remember early on preseason, you were real excited about the Hawks, and they kind of sputtered coming out the gate for real. But they have pulled it together. They're now sitting at the 4th spot above the Knicks and behind the Bucks. Like, this is not a lost cause for this Hawks team, and they can end up hosting a playoff series as well, which will likely be what happens. Jalen, there's some talk from Joe Burrow, who said that he wants to be ready for the opener after having knee surgery last year. And all discussion around Joe Burrow is about just how poorly he was protected last year. But they've got the number 5 spot. We know 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks. 4, Kyle Pitts, or else if I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, I'm not even going to be. That's it. I'm not even a fan anymore. If they don't take Kyle Pitts at 4, I don't even know what to tell you. But then at 5, Penei Sewell from Oregon. Just an absolute bulldozer. Just an absolute monster on the line. One of the best offensive line prospects we've seen in a while. And I'm telling you, Joe Burrow couldn't be happier. If you're Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, your former receiver, is there, who you have so much chemistry with, and Penei Sewell is there, who would you rather them take?
Oh, that's an easy one. It seems like a great idea to always take the person that's the skill player, take that running back, take that wide receiver. And then you got to remember something. You need to keep your franchise quarterback upright. Who, by the way, as a young number 1 overall pick, was dynamic in not only being productive, but I can't lie, Jacoby, was extremely durable based on the hits he was already taking.
Yeah.
So for me, you got to go offensive line. You got to protect your quarterback for the next decade. You'll get wide receivers. You'll get running backs. And I'm not going to like they're all created equal. But what I will say is you must protect your franchise quarterback. Go with the offensive line.
We also have some other quarterback news. Taysom Hill, who has been a tight end, been a running back, been a quarterback. He's covered punts for the Saints.
He got
a new deal with the Saints. And it basically looks great on paper, but it can all go away after this season. He says that quote, "My focus is on being a full-time quarterback," end quote. Jalen, that's his focus. Do you think that's the Saints' focus?
Ooh, no. The Saints have plenty of time to put him at quarterback, fam. How many years he been there?
4, I think.
Okay, how many games he started at quarterback? Like maybe four?
Three. I think three this season. Okay,
exactly. And I don't believe.
Four games, there you go.
If they wanted him to be their starting quarterback, they would have gave him the more opportunities. They clearly appreciate him as a football player. We all do. Like he's a game-changing player.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
He's just not a starting quarterback. So he should say this because I mean I'm pretty sure that's his goal to play quarterback. He should definitely say this. But if I'm the Saints, I look no further than Cam Wake's interview on Jalen and Jacoby. And when we start talking about the quarterback position from the Saints, it reminded me of what Larry Brown was doing the year he gave me 15 DNPs. He was looking for people to play in front of me. You remember we asked Cam, he's like, so what you want to do with the quarterback? He's like, oh man, we got Javis, we got it. Taysom Hill wasn't even on the team. He didn't even say his name.
No.
We asked him about the quarterback spot. He never said his name.
If you look at someone like Jalen Hurts when he had an opportunity last year, he sort of put up a performance against the Saints in his first game where it was like, oh, okay. I can see him being a starting quarterback in the league. There was nothing about what Taysom Hill did in his opportunities that he had to be a starting quarterback in those four games that made me feel like, oh, maybe there's something here. Maybe this is a career for him. Maybe we build around him. Like, I didn't feel that way.
Bam. Again, he's a terrific football player, a Swiss Army knife. But I saw him throw a couple of helium balls. I saw him throw a couple of punts up there, a couple of fair catches.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when he was playing quarterback. So, again, in doses, yes. Change up the tempo, make some plays, run by a lineman and a linebacker, run over a D-back, absolutely. Drop back and play quarterback and throw the ball 35 times, I'm not going to be able to do it.
No. No. No chance. Jalen, we had some other games I want to discuss with you. The Clippers beat the Blazers. No Kawhi. He's got a foot injury. But this game, the Clippers, frankly, should not have won. And it really got me thinking. They're 41-19. 60 games into the season. Only 12 games less. Paul George is playing phenomenally. They're getting contributions from a lot of other players. Everyone except for me thought the Clippers were going to win the championship last year. They lost Lou Will and Montrez, but they added Ibaka, and Rondo was out there connecting with Boogie Cousins yesterday. This isn't that different of a team from last year. They've added some more experience and some vets. Why aren't they more in the championship conversation?
We're just waiting for the playoffs, and it's hard to watch their team play the majority of their games and only talk about the playoffs when Kawhi isn't participating because of a foot injury. So, because you know if he's not healthy, that's not a realistic goal. However, what has happened this year is Paul George has not only regained his confidence, but his health. And I'm interested to see if that carries to the playoffs. Moog Morris is shooting 50% from three. Zubac is giving him some good minutes now up front. He's a continuing to improve as a big. That's where I was always wondering. And then you also add Serge. So I like their five spot minutes now. Because like the Celtics, when you watch the Clippers and the Celtics play, I'm about to give everybody a nice visual. The ending forwards, even though it's positionless basketball for both teams, are going to be Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in the East. It's going to be Paul George and Kawhi Leonard in the West. If you look at the body types of those players, they're going to have to go against players who just are imposing with their size and their bulk. So therefore, who the other bigs are mandatory because you need one body to play against the Joker. You need a different type of body to play against Anthony Davis. You need somebody that can guard on the post to play against Embiid and or block shots. That's why the Lakers got so many bigs. But I'm only talking about the Clippers and the Celtics. So up front now, if you got Kawhi and PG, you also got Serge. You also got Morris. You also got Zubac. My issue with the Celtics is, who do they have up front? Williams, Time Lord, giving them good minutes. Can block some shots, can rim run, can grab some boards. The other Williams is undersized. There are going to be times when he struggles. Tristan Thompson, really good offensive rebounder. Pretty good defender still. Not a weapon offensively at all. And none of those guys are scorers or threat offensively. So the Clippers did a good job to me of what they did, having a variety of bigs. And so, Jacoby, when Kawhi returns, I feel like, along with the Lakers, they're clearly the two best teams in the West. And that'll be the conference finals matchup, unlike last year.
It's interesting because we're talking about the current number three and number five seed, you know? Like, we all need to see that the Suns and the Jazz, like, I just don't see them in the finals. Tell me why I'm
not
wrong.
This year.
Why am I wrong?
Well, is it time for Mikal Bridges and DeAndre Ayton to be in the finals just yet?
Yeah.
You know, Devin Booker to play in his first playoffs and then get to the finals that first time. It doesn't take away from what they're accomplishing this year. And big shout to Chris Paul, who obviously has been a game changer and a terrific leader and mentor to that team, along with his productivity and his ability to close games. And same with the Utah Jazz. They shoot the basketball extremely well from three. But I just think the Lakers and Clippers are on another level when everybody's healthy going into this year's playoffs since the Nuggets lost Jamal Murray. That's the domino that lost that got off the board for me. I wanted to see my Nuggets, our Nuggets, my King, the Joker, legitimately have a chance to make it to the finals this year. And without Murray, unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
I know. If you don't remember, Murray in the bubble, like, there were games where Jokic took a back seat. Jokic is the front runner for the MVP. I'd be kind of surprised at this point if he doesn't win MVP. But there were a handful of playoff games where it was clearly Jamal Murray's, you know, machine, and Jokic was just part of the engine, one of the Pistons. Well, Mr. Rose, I'm so excited about that. I'm also excited about what's about to happen. We always like to turn the show over to our listeners. If you call 985-80-JALEN, again, 985-80-JALEN, you can leave us a voicemail. You can talk about anything in the world. This is the stuff that makes our show the best, because you guys can offer topics that we would never put in the daily news. So I'd love to hear what you have to say. Call 985-80-JALEN right now and let me know what you think. We'll put you on the show just like this.
Hey, Jalen, Jacoby. This is Eric from Athens, Georgia. Go Dogs. Shout out to Reg, all the other fine people that help make you two look good every day and sound good on the pod. I was watching the Nets-Pelicans game last night, and at times saw Blake Griffin guarding Zion and watched Zion just bully him all over the place. And it made me wonder whether Zion is actually the player that people hoped Blake Griffin would become when Blake entered the league a decade or so ago. Keep doing a great job. Thanks.
Awesome parallel. And I felt that way as Zion was coming out to be drafted. So many comparisons to, and thank you for the call. Appreciate the love. Thank you for shouting out our staff. We appreciate the continued support. We do have the best staff and the best team in the game. There were a lot of comparisons to Zion that people were making, that I was looking to form. And usually I like to take what I consider the person's best attribute, and that is the thing that you try to attach first. So for me, it was not only his explosiveness, but at his size and weight with his bulk. Respectfully, you shouldn't, normally people don't wobble when they walk, but then jump out of the gym. That's Zion. Like, he's the baby Huey. That when I was young, it was like the dude that didn't know his own size and didn't know his own strength. Like, I'm gonna tell y'all a secret. Zion averaging 30 and he ain't really in shape yet.
That's what I was about to say. I fully expected that at this point in his NBA career, he would have shed a lot of that weight and sort of like had the nutritionist and the trainer. And we would be like, oh, remember when he came in, he was kind of like had a little baby fat. But now look at him. He's really an attuned, finely tuned professional athlete with all the resources the Pelicans gave him. But that hasn't happened. And I'm surprised by that.
Well, he in New Orleans, he probably get some gumbo, some beignets.
Oh, yeah.
They but here's when you, I'm going to tell you when you know he's in shape. These two things are going to go hand in hand, like Jalen and Jacoby. When he start making jump shots. Because he's going to have to get in shape to do that, because you need your legs. So the reason why I bring that part up, and for all you lefties out there, this is not a made up stat. 400, and I'm going to say this like 50 more times to the end of the year, so get ready for this. 499 people have played in NBA games this year. Only 46 of them shoot the basketball with their left hand. That's less than 10%. Less than 10% of NBA players shoot the basketball with their left hand. I'm not talking about LeBron James and Russell Westbrook being left-handed and writing with it. I'm talking about playing with your left hand. Zion is one of those players. Blake Griffin, once he improved his jump shot and started getting some injuries, he started to drift away from the basket. You look at his early career when he was attacking the basket, ferocious dunks on anybody that would get in the way. Kendrick Perkins, Steven Adams, the list goes on and on and on of the bodies that Blake Griffin caught. But as his body started to break down, he started to move further from the hoop. If Zion does not have his body break down, you are right. He's going to sustain the productivity and the explosiveness that we thought Blake Griffin was going to be able to do as a member of Lob City.
Couple things. Number one, 10% of the NBA is left-handed, right? That is the exact same index as human beings in general. So it's actually not that surprising of a stat. So it's about the same amount of people in the world are left-handed, about the same amount of people in the NBA are left-handed. Secondly, I
you know that's apples and oranges. Do you know the NBA is a blue tick league?
That's oranges and oranges.
What are you saying? That's just like me saying, how about this? There will never be a left-handed shortstop play Major League Baseball.
Because why? It's a disadvantage for the position.
Because of the geometry of the court.
Yeah.
I mean, the geometry of the diamond, right?
Yes.
That doesn't take place in basketball. Therefore, it's a one-size-fit-all.
Oh, my God. First of all, I appreciate your passion, Mr. Rose. Sometimes you're passionately wrong. Of course, there are more than 10% of MLB pitchers that are left-handed because it's important to, you know, throw from both sides of the mound. However, in the NBA, there is no left-handed advantage per se. You would think there would be some because you're so used to guarding right-handers, but like at that level, there's no advantage. So it's the same number of people in the world, the same index, 10%, as there are in the NBA. So there you go. Seems to work out is about right.
David Jacoby, do you do know that 499 and 46 is less than 10%, right?
Okay. Yes, I do know that, Mr. Rose. I do know that. Yes. So it is very close. And maybe, you know what? The index is probably not exactly 10% either. I just Googled it quickly and it said approximately 10%. Man.
Okay. So if the number is like 8% and the index is like 11 or 12%, that's real currency.
In that hypothetical world, you're absolutely right, but that's just not the real world that we live in. I'm about to do this.
Lefties, don't get discouraged out there. You got to go harder. I'll tell you another example, how certain teams like to run their offense. Like, it used to be like that with quarterbacks too, because of the left tackle dynamic.
Now, you're right about this. I've seen you a million times have trouble writing on something because you're left-handed and the world is built for right-handers. I'm not trying to say that there is no plight for left-handed human beings in the world. I'm just simply trying to point out that you would think that 10% is a small number of left-handers in the league, but 10% is actually the amount of left-handers there are in the world. That's all. That's all I'm trying to say. We both be right.
How about it's more than 10% of lefties have been presidents because of our intellect and we think with our right mind?
I would take that from any other source, but you're rarely thinking from your right mind. You're rarely coming from your right mind. I don't know if it's a left mind, right mind, out of your mind. Don't mind me. I don't know what mind you're working on, but I don't know about it. Well, I think you made a really good comparison along with Eric from Athens about Blake Griffin and Zion. And there was a little bit of a concern coming in that he would just be this Blake Griffin type of highlight dunker. But the passing, the driving, the working with the offense, the playmaking wouldn't be there. But that's not a concern with Zion Williamson. That is not a
Blake
concern.
Blake got that too. Blake 2010 and 4-5 too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. And I think that I really look forward. I think one of the best things that happened to the Pelicans there is like, you know what? Let's just give Zion the ball. Let's have Zion figure this out. You know, because remember, do you remember when Gedry was a coach? There's a couple times where he didn't touch the ball for the last like 6 or 7 possessions. In the postgame press conference, Alvin Gentry had to be like, we got to figure out a way to get Zion the ball more. And, you know, Stan Van Gundy was paying attention. He's like, if I'm going to make a mistake, I'm going the other way. I'm gonna have to explain why we gave him the ball too much. I think that's the right way to go when you have a player like that. We have time for one more voicemail. Let's hear what it is.
My guy, J&J, Jalen and Jacoby. What up, Reg? Shout out. What up, though, folks? Hey, this is Justin out here in Sacramento, California. I just had a quick question. So I work at a courthouse that is predominantly a female workforce. And I have a wife that I could say is jealous or whatever the case. She feels that every woman is after me just because she was after me. So why wouldn't someone else be after me? How do I navigate giving her the confidence that she's the one for me? I'm not looking for anybody else. Who I work with is strictly work. I do my job, and I come home to her every single day and every single night. Give me a little bit of advice. Love you guys. Perfect show. All right, y'all.
Wow, that's a tricky situation. So I think he said he worked in a poorhouse, which I mean is I think he means like a bar, basically, that pours beer. I think that's like a chain. I'm not sure. So he's got, regardless of where he works and regardless of the environment or the industry, he's got a predominantly female set of colleagues. And his lady knows this. And she's a little concerned and jealous. Mr. Rose.
Uh-huh.
How should Justin handle this?
So here's a couple of things, Justin. So your words and your actions have to align.
One quick amendment. He said it was a courthouse that he works at, not a poorhouse. A courthouse with a predominantly female set of colleagues. But continue.
So for me, as long as your words and your actions align, you're just fine. Now, is she feeling that way because you gave her a reason to, like you're saying to us? Or is it because you're just so irresistible and so loving to her and so handsome. And
that's what it is.
Such great shape and such great feet and such great hands. And y'all never got into an argument. And you never left the dish in the sink.
She can't imagine a woman that wouldn't want on. She can't even fathom.
You lay down your jacket so she can walk over a puddle when it's not even raining. Like, is it that?
It's in her eyes, this is the perfect man. In her eyes, this is the pinnacle of the male species. And any woman that gets exposed to you will just, it's like moths to a flame. It's like a spell. It's like hypnosis that she can't imagine a world in which women aren't attracted to you. So that's a compliment. Take that as a compliment. But this is something that you have to manage. And let me give you some concrete advice of ways you can do so. Now, you said, have you given her a reason? Let's just try to not text with the colleagues, right? Let's not try to bring them up too much. When you come home from work and she says, how was work? Let's not talk about how Sandra was upset and Susan brought in cookies for everybody and Sarah, was out sick. Because then you're just saying their names and bringing that energy out there. Now, a couple other things is this is also not really a you problem to fix. It's kind of a her problem. I was a jealous boyfriend once upon a time, like a million years ago. And I realized I just had an epiphany. I was like, this is just my own weakness. This is my own insecurity manifesting itself. Why am I being jealous about stuff? Like, part of it is work that she needs to do, but you can't control the work that she needs to do. But you can take some steps into doing so is making her feel like there is no other woman in the world. No one else exists.
Also,
just you.
Here's something major you can do. How about when you have a work function, you invite her?
I was about to say that. Parade her around.
Once you do that, and then she get a chance to size everybody up, because newsflash, everybody, it's like boxing. Everybody's always sizing everybody else up. If you're trying to act like that's not happening, you're deaf, dumb, or blind. People are always, if Jacoby and I are walking down the street and then Jacoby starts huffing and puffing at me, the first thing I start doing is sizing him up. It's like a computer profile. Just go real quick. You know what
Terminator.
I'm saying? Exactly. Everybody always sizing each other up. And she now is gonna get a chance to see who you work with. And then when y'all leave, she's had a chance to size everybody up. And she now is going to have her opinion about everybody you work with. And that's fine if you don't have nothing to hide.
I definitely think that's good advice. One of the things I was thinking is exposure. If you introduce her to everybody, you bring her to work, you sort of like, you know, and she feels that she is represented in the minds and hearts of all of these female colleagues that find you so irresistible, because that's definitely the case, then I think that would really work. But that's number one. Number one is make sure that she's introduced to and that she sees the environment. And another thing is working at a bar and working at a courthouse are two different things. I mean, you can flirt anywhere, but like, I don't know. In the courthouse environment, there can only be so much opportunity for relationship building. You know, I mean, lives are changing right in front of you at all times. But Justin, call us back and let us know how it's going, because I'm invested now in your relationship.
Absolutely. And we want to hear how it's going. Please keep your boys posted.
Make sure you call 985-80-JALEN. You can ask us relationship advice. You can ask about the NBA or anything that's on your mind that you want us to talk about, because we will be back with another show tomorrow. Why is that, Jalen Rose?
We're not done. We're not done. We are not done.